just a minute. Thank you very much. Welcome everybody to this meeting of the Economic and Planning Scrutiny Committee. We start with the minutes. Anybody got any observations on the minutes, or can I sign them? Apologies, thank you.
Councillor Edgela, substitute for Gareth James, is not here. And Councillor Loughran, substituted by Councillor Andy McNaughton.
Welcome. Public question time, nil. Councillor session, nil. Members' items, nil. Called in items, nil. Takes us straight through to the officer's report, starting with the infrastructure funding statement, and that is, as I understand it, Alex Yengel to introduce.
Thank you very
Thanks,
much.
Alex.
So this is page 3 of your agenda, the item on the Staffordshire Infrastructure Funding Statement that provides an overview of what has been secured, received and used over the course of the year from the 1st of April 2024 to the 31st of March 2025. And then verified through our finance systems. So this is the most up-to-date position. It's a legal duty for us to publish the infrastructure funding statement, so that's on our website in December. And if you turn over the page to page 4, the summary identifies the key highlights from the infrastructure funding statement itself. So that identifies what's been secured over the course of the year, what's been received and completed in terms of affordable housing, what's been allocated to particular projects, and then what has been spent. And then Power 5.2 sets out how much we still have available, either allocated to projects and those projects are being delivered, or yet to be allocated, available to be shared. And then turning through to page 6, we actually got the detail of the infrastructure funding statement itself, and that includes some useful tables that identify which particular projects have been allocated this year, what's been spent over the year, and an overview as well of the projects that are ongoing. So it's been another busy, successful year securing Section 106 and then getting it into the council, and then allocating it to projects and seeing projects delivered in different parts of the borough. So that's a short introduction to this information item. Hopefully
anybody got a comment at this moment? Can I just ask you something? On page 8, on your introduction, the second bullet, non-financial contributions such as undertaking certain works, for example, the provision of open space or affordable housing, these are often delivered on-site, although can be provided off-site. Now, the question I've got is, who decides about the providing off-site? Because it seems to me that there are an awful lot of developers making deals to deliver off-site, which is not necessarily very good for the estates that are being developed. Because it doesn't provide enough green space on the actual new estates that are being developed.
Yeah, so the non-financial contributions are normally arranged through the legal processes of when the Section 106 is signed, and then ensuring that there's sufficient provision for open space, for example, in related to particular developments. But some of those developments may, for various sort of practical reasons, not be able to fully identify and allocate the open space, and so therefore that's why it goes to off-site. And again, in terms of affordable housing, there can be affordable housing may be developed on sites that are linked to but not actually the particular site.
But who decides that? And the developer comes along and says, well, actually, we haven't got enough space because we actually want to build three more houses on that space. And it sort of seems to me that maybe the option is there for them to do that. Perhaps that links in with biodiversity net gain. I don't know. Is it all part of the same consideration that's is taking place?
Well, it is something that the council works with the developers in order to come up with those sort of practical solutions. You're right about how it works and when it works, so that the associated triggers, and to then make sure that we ensure that the developers meet their obligations, however that is best served for the communities.
Now, that doesn't answer the question. That how do we stop the developers using the green space on the estates to build houses, because they say, actually, we'll put it off-site, we'll give it to the our allocation to the Wildlife Trust and they can have nice green space somewhere else, but we're still left then with overdeveloped housing estates.
I'm
not saying this happens, I'm saying...
In
fact, I am saying it happens, to be honest, seems to me.
It'd be interesting to know a bit more detail about particular cases where that might have occurred, but ordinarily that shouldn't be the case, because we've got the quality and quantity assessments through the Sporting England approach that actually identifies what proportion of open space should be provided in different sports and recreation facilities on site or off site as well. So it is quite specific about how much open space should be provided on a particular site, depending on the size of the site.
Yeah.
And that is done through the Section 106 process with our leisure policy officers that do those calculations and then sit down with the developers and our legal team to make sure that the actual scheme identifies precisely the amount of open space that needs
so
to be.
So we're concerned about green space for leisure, not for nature.
Well, the green infrastructure can include informal open space for leisure and also pick up biodiversity enhancement elements. And so what you find is that some parts of the informal open space will provide for both leisure and biodiversity purposes. I'm more than happy to sort of take away any sort of specific examples and come back to you with any sort of further information if that's helpful.
Yeah, we'll have another look at it. Sorry, everyone. I've got Brian, then John.
Yeah. What happens when the developer fails to hand over the open space on a development? It then later goes bankrupt. The open spaces then appear on an auction and people buy up plots or don't. And then the borough council refuses to maintain the area, leaving the place looking like a shambles. What happens in that instance?
I think he has got an example of that too.
Well, I would be interested in that example. I mean, as I understand it, there are management companies that are normally set up in order to manage that open space.
There's Henry Bolton was the contractor that built half of Parkside. McLean's built the other side. McLean's handed over their green spaces. Bolton's didn't. And they're saying that later stages have come. And I've been inundated for the last few years with planning applications where the companies picked up these.
Michelle will.
Yes, so the actual process would be that whereby some land is designated for whatever reason within a Section 106 agreement, part of the reason for having a legal agreement is to make sure that the legal obligations are met. And if they aren't, then we've got a legal recourse to challenge that. With the specific one you're talking about, I know you've had an issue with this for a while. If you can give us some details of the specifics separately, we can come back to you with the current position with that, because it may well be, because I know that's not a recent, it's not a recent development, is it?
No, it's no. 60 years old.
Yeah, and so that kind of legal framework's moved on a bit, so the situation you're describing I don't think should be the case now, but we can certainly see if there's anything.
Because what I'm getting from streets here, no, I'm not going to cut that down, I'm not going to clear that area, because we've been advised that we don't own that. It's owned by Bilton. Well, Bilton doesn't exist anymore.
But what we're generally looking at, Alex will tell me if I get the year wrong, but the main Planning Act legislation is 1990. So obviously it will predate that. But we can certainly look into it for you if you want to get details.
Michelle, it drives me bloody mad.
Thank you. Hi. You mentioned that the developer and legal would sit down and work out the calculation of the amount of green space that would have to be in any particular development. Is there a formula for that, like guidelines for that, or is it literally just what's agreed between whichever stakeholders or partners that have the meeting?
So the starting point will be the adopted local plan policy. And that identifies local standards that we have acquired when new development comes forward. So officers in my team will look at the particular developments and identify what is required from that development in terms of open space, matter, contributions, etc. And then they will present that as part of the planning application process, so when the planning consent is given, either through committee or by the by officer delegation, then it, at that stage it identifies what land, how much, and for what should be included in the Section 106 agreement. So then the Section 106 agreement is that process where the developer works with the legal team, but on the basis of what's included in the report to ensure that that is legally banned and then delivered on site, which we can then monitor once the site is actually being built out. So there's the local standard, but there's also a Sport England calculator that again does the same thing, and so that is all taken into account in order to make sure that the Section 106 agreement is robust and linked to the local policy.
Thank you.
That's right. Oh, Doug next, then.
I want to come back on the adoption of green spaces, actually, because I think there's a, whilst that's an older thing, I have kind of questions about the process by which new estates then get eventually adopted, the green spaces for the borough. Obviously, the roads is the county as a whole is a terror. What that process is, and because obviously in the intervening period, I think my concern for council taxpayers is in the intervening period they're paying council tax and they're paying the management company, and how can we make that process, that length of time, as short as possible, because I spend an enormous amount of time chasing Burghfields is on its fourth contractor management company, doing things like emptying bins and all these things, which isn't the borough's responsibility, but residents do come to me and ask about it. So I'm aware that Burghfields is not going to be finished for ages, but there are two finished estates in Woke Ward, which are, as far as I'm aware, the green spaces are not yet adopted, and I would just wonder what the process is there.
So it's nothing peculiar to Stafford Borough. This is basically the situation that you have, that as part of the developments that are put forward, there is an expectation that the management companies will deal with certain elements, and the period in which they will have that responsibility is usually, I think, written into the Section 106 agreement, because effectively the point of that exercise is that before the council will take that on, it needs to be an adoptable standard. The reason for that is what we don't want is if there's, for example, an open space within a development and then it's not laid out, we then bear the cost of laying it out, which isn't fair because we didn't do the development, and the whole point of having that open space put in is because it's to mitigate the impact of the development, so it doesn't make sense for us to bear that cost. You're absolutely right though, you do get time lags, and I know certainly with the adoption of roads that can be quite significant. As to what the actual process is, Alex, I think that's possibly one that we need to involve colleagues from Open Space on, I think, to understand what that back and forth looks like and whether there's anything in there that we can do to maybe speed it up a little bit.
It's true with all the new estates. I mean, the ones.
The other question is, some where they have those management companies, some have management companies where they have residents on the board. and some won't even entertain the conversation.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we can put in terms of policy that we might have that would require them to involve residents in that process?
It's a lovely idea and it would potentially help solve problems, but no.
Okay.
Okay. But it does make a lot of sense.
I mean, yeah. Brendan. The same problem with Marston Grange.
Yeah.
Brendan.
Thank you, Chair. I think this is touching on some areas of Section 106 of which I've become famous. Earlier involvement with ward members, because as we know, all those negotiations with the developer happen prior to planning being approved, and then there can be quite a long gap then between that approval commencing on site, the trigger point being reached for the money to be collected. And that can be several years, and it's probably only about that point that ward members are aware that this money is now in the bank. What do you want to do with it? And my point is that if once planning is approved, then ward members are made aware of what the Section 106 agreement is, how much it is, and can they go out into their community and look for projects that would be more useful, rather than just saying, well, okay, we're going to commute that open space off the site to on the site to off site. Yeah. And you get a case like on page 10 here, Jubilee Fields in Great Haywood, £325,000 is an astronomical amount of money to be spent on a football pitch, a car park, and refurbishing the dressing rooms. And speaking with some people this afternoon from the college, perhaps some of that money might have been better spent on something other than off-site open space leisure or sport facility and some other part as well. But we are hamstrung by the terms of the Section 106.
Who's going to pick that one up?
Well, I'm happy to. There is the opportunity, obviously, for parish councillors and board members and others to get involved and share their thoughts when the planning application is going through. Once it gets consent, then yes, there is a time lag between the Section 106 agreement being signed and then the development starting, and that can be several years before the development is started, and then certain trigger points are reached, and then the money comes back to the borough council in order to then be able to move forward with delivering those projects. And where we can, we offer that opportunity for the parish to work with us within the bounds of the Section 106 agreement. And the three tests about is it necessary and reasonable and related to the development. And within that and what's included in Section 106, then there is the opportunity to talk with parish councils and work with them on what's actually delivered. But it has to be within that those legal boundaries rather than some certain money coming in for Section 106. Under a certain category, and then it's being used for something else, and that isn't legally possible to do. And certainly, the developers would challenge us if we did try to do that. So yes, it's sort of making sure that everyone is aware of the process and how long it can take to make sure that the community's expectations about when that those new facilities are delivered are reasonable, so that they're frustrated by the fact that it's taking a long time.
We can, through you, Chair, if I may.
Yes, I'd like you to come back at
it. It is this 3-5 year time gap, which to me at least is a waste of time, and it's missing an opportunity to fine tune, because things can move on in 5 years. What might have been demanded 5 years ago is different now as different developments come on board, and it's just that earlier involvement with ward members and the communities to see what do you want to use it for now is better than waiting for it to come in and then say, well, we've got to spend that money on the open space there because that's what was agreed. The fact that something different or better might come along in the meantime doesn't seem to come into the equation.
I think we need to keep coming back at this because it's a point Brendan keeps making and seems to me it's a matter of process, and I can't understand why it can't be achieved.
So with a Section 106 agreement, you have to strike a balance between it being specific enough so that you can kind of make sure the developers deliver what is needed in the area to which it relates, which is those three tests Alex was talking about mm-hmm. earlier. But at the same time, you want to try and keep a little bit of flexibility within that so that it doesn't name a particular site. Because as you say, the world moves on. Somebody might get funding come through to develop something. So by the time the 106 kicks in, it's already been done. Generally, Alex, I think they're at ward level, aren't they? Yeah. So as long as you're broadly within the ward, you don't then get caught up in having to do deeds of variation and all that kind of stuff, because that does take absolutely ages. But it's quite tricky because there's nothing within the regs that puts any statutory kind of negotiations in with the parishes. And that's the problem. So we can encourage it, but we can't require it.
It is a frustration, as you know.
It is. It'll come back again, for sure. Anybody else got any points of
view? Going on the 106, I had a great scheme on my ward, the Holmcroft playing field, worked with Michelle, Sally McDonald, and a couple of others. And I think it was five different lots of 106 we pulled together for a spend of £424,000, round about that figure. And we got a wonderful neighbourhood bell cow in it. Mm. So, you know, you've got to talk to the officers on a constant basis. They were sick of seeing me up in the planning department, you know.
Surely not. Can I just say, we've just got as far as the introduction. So I'm now moving to page 9 to the summary. Seems very quick to go from introduction to summary. Do you want to carry on, Alex, and pick anything else out that you think is important, or is everything covered?
I've covered all the others to draw out.
Okay. Do members want to go through the pages, look at the individual schemes? If so, I'm looking at page 10, page 11. Page 12, 13, and 14.
On page 14, for some of the facilities that this pays for, this is just a capital investment for it. What provision is there within somewhere else then for the maintenance of that? I'm thinking of, for example, 3G Pitch on Round Park, which has quite a substantial maintenance overhead to maintain it properly, which it hasn't had, and like the fact that there is further money available for those types of things. Obviously, where there's the things like the King Eddie's pitch, that's supporting the building of a pitch, and someone else is going to deal with it for things which are held by the Borough of Rochester.
So, Alex, jump in if this has moved on since I used to deal with this, but for example, with open space, there'll be a requirement to either deliver the open space on site or deliver it somewhere else. There'll also be a maintenance element to that, and that amount is calculated basically by street team who work out what the additional cost to the authority is over a number of years. I don't know whether there's a set number of years or whether that's dependent on the size of the development. We'd have to take that away. But basically, they work out what the cost is to the authority, and that commuted sum basically sits separately to these figures because we don't allocate that as part of any works. That's purely for the revenue.
So there is a maintenance element.
There is a maintenance element, but not within those numbers you see there.
So we received this report. There are a few actions out of it. I'm looking at Jackie now. If we don't specify our actions, they get lost.
It's just to be noted.
The report's to be noted.
Oh, I think it was if Councillor Pross can give us the details of the site that he'd got. Was it biodiversity net gain? Was it that one that you had a query on, a site specific one?
No, it was the eating up of green space as well, for partly biodiversity net gain, but very often it's the viability argument that the developers use, but also the opportunity to use BNG to allocate green space elsewhere rather than the estate. And we haven't talked about viability, but that's one of the arguments that developers like to use as well as not. So we'll bring this back at some stage, and Brendan's points, I think, particularly. Do you want to itemise them?
That
we have an action point in here.
Okay. Well, one is, I think, earlier intervention or earlier involvement by ward members and communities to fine tune any Section 106 agreement that it delivers to the community what the community wants rather than what's been imposed on them. And I get that it's all legal and you have to make sure that there's no loopholes in it. But it seems to me that, I'm pleased, by the way, that Section 106 money is actually now dribbling out. That's welcome. But it's still this about trying to deliver what people want rather than what is imposed upon them.
And how does this work? Is this an action that we will ask to come back to this committee, or is it an action we would like to be, or are there actions that we'd like to be taken to Cabinet for Cabinet to consider?
I think with the ones that are information requests, we'll basically pull the information together and then circulate that via Jackie to the committee. I think the points that you've raised are, you probably need to think about what you want to do with those next. It's probably not an action for this meeting.
It probably is a review of the Section 106 process, I guess.
And how do we bring that back to this committee? We don't have a matters arising on our agendas. No. I've never understand why we don't have matters arising.
Alex, but Section 106 is a work stream in its own right, isn't it, for this committee?
Yeah, and then we've got the opportunity to discuss it again and provide some feedback in March.
Yeah, well, March agenda's just too big. We need an extra meeting, I'm afraid to say. So could you bring it to our next agreed meeting? Particularly Brendan's point.
Yes,
we'll bring in the information at the same time. Sorry?
March.
Yes.
Yes, the agenda for the 1st of March is very big. So we.
It's an additional meeting.
Oh, yes, so we've got that.
Which is for Section 106.
That's for Section 106. Could it be added to that?
Don't get me wrong.
That's to do with the finances. It's rather, we could have an extension of that meeting. That makes sense, wouldn't it?
Part of the opposite presentation of that meeting on the 31st of March.
And Resources Committee could sit in on it if they'd like to.
It's a joint committee.
Yeah, okay. It's a joint meeting.
Yeah.
And Brendan will lead. Thank you very much. Sorry that was a bit tortuous, but I didn't want to lose it because it's very easy for things to be debated and then lost in translation.
I just wanted to make the point that Cam, who's sitting behind us here, he pulled together this infrastructure funding statement this year. He's done a fantastic job, and it was the first time that he did it without any other officers involved. So just wanted to make that point.
Well done. It's very clear, and it's given us lots of food for thought to follow up on. Thanks for all of that. Section 106 does keep coming back at us, doesn't it? So we now move on to agenda item 7C. Am I right?
No, B.
B. The master plan, indeed. Presentation by Michelle.
I'll hand over to Maxine. I'm just driving.
Presentation by Maxine.
Do you all know Maxine?
Oh, sorry.
So Maxine is our programme manager within the Economic Development and Regeneration team, and Maxine's been leading on the piece of work that we're going to talk to you about this evening.
And also, I'm very bad at projecting my voice, so if you...
You have to shout.
Exactly. If you can't hear me, tell me, and if I feel like I'm shouting at you, it's because I always get pulled out for not projecting. But way back in the summer, the County Council and the Borough Council commissioned a master plan for Stafford Town Centre. In a moment there's a map with a red line on, so you can have a look at what we mean by Stafford Town Centre. But we appointed, after a procurement process, David Locke Associates to complete the master plan. And David Locke Associates come along with a range or a raft of subcontractors or consultants that support them. And it's important that from a delivery perspective of the Commission, we understand that David Locke is the architect of the master plan, but they're supported by KMC, who are their transport engineers, and then you have Cushman and Wakefield, who are very intense in terms of market analysis, and then you have Genicon, which are very focused on environmental, social, economic factors, for example, population changes and retail changes, and how geography affects all of those things. So together they form a group of consultants that are taking forward the master plan. The funding for the borough's set part of that commission is from UKSPF. So it's money that needs to be out the door by the end of this financial year, and it provides half of the commission, and the county the other half, and we have a little bit of a wriggle room as well. So, you know, it's not up to the penny, and David Locke came in a little bit short, so there is some contingency. So David Locke have a great deal of experience in town planning, urban design, development, and then together with their consultants, they do economic and transport. And they've done a number of projects like the one that we wrote out in our brief in Stevenage, Bradford and Doncaster, which you're all going to go, that's not in Staffordshire, but as a group of professionals within the team, they have lots of people that have lots of local knowledge about Staffordshire. They've completed commissions in Lichfield, but they also have personal roots to the area, so they're very much aware of Stafford, Staffordshire, the West Midlands, and how all of that fits together. They're not like parachuted in, they're very clear about the geography of the place. So the red line, if you look, isn't the red line that Alex has in his local plan that says here is the primary shopping area for the town centre. It's not the red line that's the town centre in the local plan. It's a combination of red lines that are relevant as of today for, since the summer for Stafford Town Centre. So you can see to the left of that extension that follows the railway line and down, that is Stafford Station Gateway. That red line is the exact red line that is within the strategic regeneration framework that's adopted. We're very clear with the consultancy team that that's being master planned. You don't need to amend, change, don't fiddle, but what you need to do is consider how that reflects or relates to the broader site, knowing that there's a railway line in between that and there. And then you'll find that you've extended it up into some green in the green space, which is to the right, which is the nature reserve, and then down so that you include the entrance into the town centre that is where like TK Maxx was, and when we all had to follow the diversion round to get into Stafford, that was our main entrance in, and that's where the road network is pretty tight.
It's where so TK Maxx was, not
was,
is.
Was, yeah. Yes. So that's where we've gone and that's what we've got. We, in our commission, we were very clear that the work that they complete has to be based in evidence and it has to be able to be tracked back into evidence. So it's not about what a feeling or a thought, it's about what the evidence leads us to suggest or consider across a range of evidence bases that are already published, but also what they have completed and generated to, from, you know, to really solidify that evidence base. and we asked them that the framework, the, if, what we call this document, whether it be a master plan or a framework, people get hung up on the name, but the reality is the document will provide clarity to developers and investors, because as we know from a Borough Council perspective, we're in the middle of demolishing and reclaiming sites, and we have funding to reclaim sites in the Gateway, and all of these things are going on, but there needs to be some sort of connection or coordination, so that if you're a developer and investor and you're looking at Stafford, the red line, you can go, this is how this relates to this, and this is what order or priority these sites will have. And but it also has to be something that has to be a little bit exciting and a little bit interesting, and not something that's just about a bit of block paving here or a tree planting here. You know, it's something that is fundamental and that will change and really consider the town centre and deliver something that is, without using words that are just, but transformational, that will change it in terms of for a generation. And it has to be viable and it has to be commercially sound. And that's really why the team includes CW and Genicon, because, you know, they've got that. And it will, once it's completed, because of the timeline for the development framework for the local plan, it should really be something so sound and strong that Alex can take and use for the base or part of the evidence for his local plan. And then also, which is the bit that I have, no, I don't get at all, but it should be something that when we want to market Stafford or we want to go to UK Reef, we can go, here, look at this document. It commercially, it looks pretty, and it all, you know, it has to be something that isn't too technical, but has all that technical evidence that it's based on, and we can share it with people. So they've got really big brief that they have to condense, and they've got 6 months to do it. It has to be completed. So
6 months from?
Well, they started in the summer and they've got to the 31st of March. Yeah. And this programme, which the little circles are really small, but that might be because I'm not living. We're moving pretty quickly, okay? So we are currently on time and on target. We've completed the inception. They've completed the baseline studies, and we're proofing those and reading through those and spotting where the full stops aren't, but also analysing and sense-checking that information right now, and that's gone back to them. They've completed a range of interviews with a whole host of stakeholders, and they also met with Cabinet and Shadow Cabinet here, and they met with county councillors as well. So they've sat out and presented to them the details and their methodologies and where they're going and their thoughts, but also asked for feedback. And they've had meetings with people like the civic, the theatre,
college,
meeting with the college. And yesterday they completed a workshop with students, A-level students, that possibly were looking at careers within the field of planning, architecture, and help them to master plan. We held a visioning workshop with officers from county and the borough, from across so many professions or technical professions, in November, to drill down on the sense of why things were like they were and where they were going and how that could support the evidence. And they have completed the spatial strategy, which is where they say these are the things that we think you need to consider, and that's what I will be reviewing over the Christmas and early January to come back and talk to people. We've really got a lot to still do. Nothing is set in stone yet. And between now and March, they'll continue to liaise with senior leadership here in the county. They'll continue to liaise with elected members again, because it's within their brief. And they need to hit some key milestones. So they need to give us the spatial strategy by the end of January, and their delivery plan with all of that evidence tied in for a final report in March. But currently they're on track, so that's good.
Just come back to the delivery plan. What is the delivery plan?
So they'll do the strategic plan, but underneath that will sit the information and data about when the site should come forward, the capacity of sites, which. So they've been given the title short, medium, and long term, and so they'll profile as well in terms of infrastructure, housing, employment. You know, just like this is what we consider you could do quickly. It's written as a delivery plan because it should have within it some costs associated to it and how it can be delivered. Well, we know that some of that will be like, well, grant statutory organisations, but we also should think about, well, how could you deliver or develop these things if you need to? So it's how can you deliver it as well as what to deliver.
And when. And that was always part of the original brief, because the borough are progressing a number of sites with the benefit of grant funding and the county are progressing a number of sites as well. What we wanted to do is make sure we don't trip ourselves up and flood the market at any particular point. So that was one of the sort of fundamentals in the brief, wasn't it?
So it's, without saying it'll identify priorities, because that suggests one thing is more important than another, but it'll give us a timeline or a plan for when things should come forward in a logical order. That means, you know, the market can understand it, but also we can see that in terms of what the urban area looks like.
And then flips into Alex's progression with the evidence base for the local plan.
Yeah.
So we've very deliberately spoken to Alex and said, do you want to see this before you do this piece of evidence, or do you want to do your piece of evidence first so that we can slot into it, just so that we're not conflicting in any way?
And if we do it well, hopefully some of that will lead to lines in policy if it's, you know.
Yeah.
What I've set out there are some of the things that have come out of the engagement with all of those stakeholders, and I think most of them you'll go, yeah, that I could see that, but what I want you to understand is that sitting behind the bullets are minutes and meetings and much more detail, because it is just a summary of bullets. But everybody was very clear about how it needed to be sequential and it needed to identify things that could happen and show that we were delivering, but also looked into the future and not just 10 years but 20. You know, as Alex thinks about the plan period, the whole plan period, and it needed to look about how the town centre functions and what the economy around it is. So it was, it needs to consider, you know, what the town centre's relationship is to Stone, but also broader and wider and up and down, and how the railway line interacts and how people come and commute and go and how they use the town centre. And you'll all go, well, we know that this end of the town centre is more vibrant than that end of the town centre. But as part of their evidence, you know, they've tracked how people get into Stafford, where they leave from Stafford, how long they stay. They've tracked where the employment has increased and which sectors have declined. And they've tracked what sectors are where on the outsides and where the houses are on the outsides as well. So it's about that.
You picked out the college as being important. I mean, there's been lots of building going on and the new stuff. Why not the county council? Because that's going to be a big issue, particularly if the county council is diminished or moved to Stoke-on-Trent or whatever. So how do you factor that in?
So because at this point in time we don't know what's going to happen with local government reorganisation, master plans, local plans to a certain extent, corporate plans for the councils have to basically be flexible to whatever comes next. So we're not proposing anything in terms of, for example, this building, the county council's buildings and their land holdings, because this document is expected to stand good for a period of time, but there are some things that we just can't plan
because
we don't know.
There may be a great employment hole.
But with the college, what we do know is that they have an ever-increasing demand. And it's thinking about, well, if we know we've got a project that's looking at development within the town centre, is that something that the college need to look into, because they know they're going to have to deal with delivering against the increased demand. So that one, it's not certain, but we know more detail about it than we do with local government reorganisation.
And they recently, so as we started the commission in the summer, the college had, with the county, a huge piece of evidence created to identify that need. So they can clearly go, there you are, and that forms part of the driver. And they talk, you would expect in the master plan that they talk about movements, they talk about severance, you know, how the road and the gyratory around the town centre operates, but more about how pedestrians move across it and through it and their journey around it. Now, since starting the commission, like, lots of buildings have come down, haven't they? So it's much easier now to stand and go, there's the tower, oh, that's the sight line. But when we wrote the brief, the town centre looked different, and we needed to understand what those opportunities were. So it's very much about how to move through and around, and more, and very importantly, how the gateway and the town centre relate, and how we move people up and through the town centre. And lots of people have identified that. And this, then in terms of
Under commercial, you don't pick out retail unless it comes on the next slide.
This isn't the next slide, but they have done an analysis of retail within the so Cushman and Wakefield has done an analysis of retail of voids and considered where the town centre has moved to. I think you can also, well, Maxine, it's moved to the riverside, but you'd like to understand why and whether that was because.
It basically flutes back to all of the evidence that we pulled together when we were bidding for the Future High Streets Fund, which was the retail market has shifted. I mean, it shifted massively in 2019 when we started on it, but by the time we got the money in early 2021, we'd had a pandemic in the middle, which just completely changed everything. And the point was always to respond to that change rather than to try and fight it. And I'm probably oversimplifying it, but the vacant units, not the ones that we've now demolished, but ones like the old M&S unit, it's too big for the small independent traders, and it's too small for the big names because they go really, really big now. So it's understanding, well, what can happen in its place, mm-hmm. as opposed to saying, how do we get back to the days when the high street is crammed with these big retailers, because the world's moved on.
But it's all been picked up.
It's all been picked up.
And hospitals, it's not on your slides. And it's sort of big area that's just not there. It's commercial. Yeah. And under commercial.
Sorry, that's my fault. I added that heading, meaning they were some of the comments around commerciality that came through.
Okay.
That's all that is.
Yeah. And I suppose as well, it's about thinking about what we can do instead of retail in spaces and places that the town that we know sit within that red line, and how we can take that forward across a really long time frame, you know, whether that's residential or improvement or commercial or leisure or that. The bottom one, which is a really interesting point that kept coming up about theatre use and the disjointedness of safe car parking and the theatre, and how the theatre was really prosperous. But how people use that theatre and how people access car parking. So it's not about, do we ever love car parking, how much is it and where is it? It's more about where is it and where is it in relation to capacity when people, you don't get kicked out of a theatre, but when you leave the theatre, and it was about those rushes in terms of that. And it wasn't just the theatre that said that, lots of people identified that. So it's about where car parking is, not necessarily about the volume of in the town centre.
You
want
the next slide, don't you?
So we've printed out some emerging themes, and that really drills down to what people have said. So it's how Staffordshire is really, you know, this hub for economic activity, but how that can be transferred into the town centre. I think that's important. That currently there is a lot happening that needs to be coordinated, but you know about all those things. But if you didn't, and you were someone who wanted to invest in Stafford, how that story is told. And it talks about and population and jobs growth, so how jobs have grown outside of the town centre, but also within the town centre, but within certain sectors like public services. And we also, one of the emerging themes is how just general markets challenge retail located in town centres. So, you know, online shopping and all of those things that we all go, yeah, we get that. But it's now written down and it's pinpointed to our town centre. And then there's the potential. A lot was talked about how there is history. It is a county town, but that seems to be lost, or an identity has been lost, and that needs to perhaps be drawn out, and the role of the town centre and the vision for the town centre would help that. And that's where I talked about the role of responding to new opportunities, perhaps that's in residential, bringing people in, being what sort of people would you want to keep in, where do all the young people go who start in Staffordshire but then go away, how do we keep them and how can they live in the town centre. But it also notes that a lot has already happened,
yeah.
That we, you know, buildings have been demolished, so we're at a point now that we're not thinking what should we do first, because we've already done that and we're going for it. So the next steps, a big milestone is receiving that draft spatial strategy that we look down and we'll review, and it's really also once we've done that how we engage with people or elected members, really, because there is no community consultation in terms of this document at this point, and so that all of that can be captured and reflected in the March, the end document. So it'll still be going at pace, and it has to go at pace, and we will keep moving forward so that we can get it done in quickly. Otherwise, it'll just, you know, there's no point taking a year or two to do it. We've just got to keep doing it.
And also, that's not to imply
that there's
any planning consent or anything embedded within this. It's purely a document that kind of sets out a direction of travel so that it's clear where we're trying to get to. There's obviously lots of different work streams to get us there.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the starting point.
Benton,
could you give me an example of the work that's been done in Doncaster? Was it Bedford?
Bedford.
Their town centre master plans.
Mm-hmm.
What I'll do is we will take a block, the consultants, to share with you their work, and they'll have it on a hyperlink, and we can just share it, and that'll be so much easier. What you will see is that they have a very bespoke style that is very David Dark in terms of style. So once you've seen one example, you'll probably go, "Ah, oh, I've seen that presentation, that style of presentation at other points," and it'll trigger other things because they're very unique in terms of how they present things. It's a style that they have. But we can get
happy
that
with
by
that.
Thank you.
I'm just going to say, looking at that, seems to be a lot of evidence of why we need a town council following the local government reorganisation. I mean, who will manage, you know, if Stafford Borough disappears, who will manage all this sort of thing?
So that's a good point, because within the document, I'm sure, I haven't written it here, but people have considered governance,
yeah,
and talked about governance. I haven't seen any proposal, and they wouldn't propose the detail.
No.
That's not necessarily where this commission would go, but I would imagine that within that short term box there would be governance as an action, so that there's a voice, and that's one voice, and that voice is you know knows where it's going and is using this document as their not blueprint, but you know, their remit for what they do. So it will be, I'm sure, captured in the end, but not a this is how you should do it, just to have a think about,
yeah,
doing it.
Mm.
Anybody else? Doug?
Just to reiterate on the parking in the theatre, that's something that comes through the District Arts Council from the theatre, people who rent the theatre, concerns around parking. Mm. I think it's partly because the north walls, the Queensway car park shuts.
That's it,
at
yeah.
Six,
yeah.
So it's
yeah.
It's the there's a car park
there
yeah.
That's right next to the theatre that's not open when people go to the theatre.
It's that. That is that bullet summarised, yeah. and not just one person said that, but
yeah.
Lots of people from lots of different places. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll cause car parks close enough. People can walk.
Well, one of us around this table actually measured in footsteps the distance between the North Walls car park and the theatre, and the theatre and the multi-storey car park, and there was very little in it. Was there?
It was me. I did a practical run,
mm-hmm.
And I think it was. It was one of the councillors who shall be nameless who was banging on about, who used to be banging on about, what did he call it? The swimming pool. Said it was a pokey little swimming pool. Well, he then said that this was a long distance to walk to get anywhere. That wasn't North Walls, so I thought, right, I'm going to measure it, and I actually walked it with my stopwatch, and it's exactly the same distance from North Walls as it is to actually these car parks.
Yeah, so that's really important because on the previous slides I talked about Severance and
yeah.
About how people navigate their way around Stafford. So, from somebody who knows Stafford Town Centre very well to somebody that visits theatre maybe once a year, they must to navigate to there or to navigate to there must be much easier, or in their minds be easier. And if you think about the town centre as a whole, how we draw people through is partly about how permeable it is and how you sight things. So I'll go on to Lichfield, but because Lichfield's street pattern is medieval, you are drawn through, aren't you, to the cathedral, just because you're drawn through, because that street pattern's there. But for Stafford street pattern, some of that exists, some of that doesn't exist. And so what we need to do is really think about how, through visual triggers, you draw people that aren't haven't grown up with Stafford and only use it or frequent it every so often. And how to them it seems really interesting as you turn a corner, but also very simple to read and move through as you turn a corner. And that's why there'll be a part within the document about that. Yeah.
And that's why I deliberately put the picture on the top of the screen there, why I included that, because as Maxine said, when we started the commission, some of the buildings that are now demolished were still in place. When they started coming down, that top picture is actually taken from Church Lane by the soup kitchen, and the amount of comments we've had about, you can see the clock tower. And then the other one, my favourite one, is when you're stood on the high street and you look up Crabbery Street and you can see the college, and they're views we didn't know we had. And so as part of the master planning work and as part of the development framework work that we're doing on specifically on the sites that we own as a council, we've been asked to consider where possible, where some of these views help with that permeability, to not lose them as part of the redevelopment, because it can be a really important way of getting people to navigate
mm-hmm.
around the town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just a couple of things. You mentioned about the car parking and stuff, and we appreciate that, you know, there is an issue with the patrons of the theatre. Because they will arrive at different times and they will leave altogether. You also said that looking at possible residential and promoting that, presumably that's going to also have an effect on parking, because most people have a car nowadays, especially as you do, most people don't work or live and work in a town centre. I presume that's also going to be taken into account. And the fact that I can't remember seeing anything on your slides about specific design or green space.
The master plan itself, in terms of green space, that will be set out within the spatial strategy. It will it will comply with the existing policy, but it may go beyond that and it may increase that. So everything that will be here will be in compliance with that green space will form a function and a place within the town centre, and I can tell you that because I've seen their plans. In terms of residential and car parking and their location, it's really about, that's a question that they need to help us solve, and that's what they're there. So they say, do you know, you really should consider increasing the amount of residential within this red line. This town centre could accommodate this X amount of, at a density of, well, what would that look like and how would that function? And they won't set out the detail of how many windows or where the front door is, but they may set out the heights, they may set out the density, and they need to consider the amenity and how those places will function within the master plan of the new town centre. What you don't want is tenements of the future. What you want is to create an area that becomes in the future, something where you go, this is how we would like this to happen, and this is a good example of high density. Because they won't be four bedrooms, bay windowed homes, but they may be able to fill an opportunity within the market. That's not to say they shouldn't have, like you said, amenity attached to them, and that's really for David Locke to go, this is what about this, how about that, this is how they're doing it. But it's not a design code,
no,
it's not that. It will form a base, and again, as the local plan emerges, when sites come and are forward and developed, it will use the raft of policies that are set out in the local plan to give the detail of that.
And I presume automatically that due care is given to existing very old structures and buildings.
Absolutely,
as you say,
yeah.
The clock tower, I can remember when that used to be part of the Methodist church.
I used to go to
a youth club there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was excited. Thank you very much.
It's historic.
No, steady. But also, you know, the fact that we do have some amazing places, and as you've highlighted, the identity potentially of the staff of being the county town isn't what it used to be. I'm very keen on really, really keeping that as one of the key factors. Now, we have some amazing buildings. Unfortunately, we can't always get into them, like the old courts. And then I used to love going in there when they had a gallery and a cup of tea. And I do really, really hope that is given the importance of.
So they'll start, their baseline will be the conservation area appraisals. And
yeah.
A conservation area, and then all the list of building information that they have, and then within David Locke they have specialists in terms of historical.
Yeah. I would be concerned that, you know, that traditionally there has always been a connection between people talking about Carl Bunkers on the landscape and local councils.
Oh.
So I would want to make sure that doesn't happen.
Oh, no. Maxine, you had Sam Moss involved in the visioning, didn't you?
Yeah.
So the conservation officer is fully involved with this, in the same way that we are involving her at the earliest stage as part of the specific redevelopment bits that the borough council are doing. So because you never want to be in a position where, oh, you shouldn't be doing that by that should never be a consideration. But to be fair, I don't think Sam would let us get anywhere near that position anyway.
And it's also about balance as well, isn't it? Because you could suggest that transport response, a highway transport response, could be completely over-engineered through the master plan, and be doing, well, what about this, how about that? So it's about balancing all of those things, really, and that's the beauty of the process of the commission itself, as everything is balanced and considered, instead of one profession or one technical arm going, this is the solution. This is the process in which you can balance that.
That could be quite interesting though, couldn't it? A master plan that's designed by transport planners, a master plan that's designed by architects, a master plan that's designed, they'd be entirely different. And the point of the exercise is exactly what Maxine says, is getting all of those views together and finding something that will potentially work for everybody.
How is the boundary chosen?
So we sat down and considered that and said, well, we know that the local plan town centre, primary town centre is this is what that plan is, but we also know we've got this, and we also know we've got our future high street, and we also know that the retailers moved, and we also know that because of we have this green space that should really be used more often. And so we just sat there and thought, we don't have to be prescriptive, we don't have to say this red line is because we've adopted it over here. It should be about what the position was now, instead of reflecting on the historic red line. But during, I'm looking at Councillor Pat, during the council, when we had conversations with councillors and other stakeholders, they were like, should it? And so that red line, we had to in the brief have a red line, you need a red line for your commission. But that's not to say that David Locke couldn't come back and go, you're missing a big opportunity here.
The reason I asked that is that there's a very strong movement to include the shoe quarter, what we now call the shoe quarter, at Down Sandon Road, just beyond the given area.
I think the kind of boring bit that sits underneath is whatever your area is, there's then cost attached to all of those bits of work that we say we need to do. So all of that evidence stuff, the more you stretch the red line, the more you stretch the budget, and it'll come as no shock to anyone, we're on a fixed budget.
Yeah.
So we do have to be mindful of tweaks to the red line. I think our starting point was, this isn't a statutory document. We're not going to upset Alex's plan if we change the red line. What we're looking at is a sensible area to look within. That doesn't mean we would deliberately disclude any areas, but particularly for the one that you're referring to, where I think that would have kind of a specialist focus on it.
It needs to be a conservation area.
I think that sort of has to sit in its own right, because there's a piece of work there that wouldn't then translate across the whole of that red line, and it's slightly different, but do take the point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it will come up, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think it's really important, sort of pairing what you said about carbuncles and buildings, and I mean, you only have to look at places like Coventry that they're now pulling down because they're absolutely awful. And we can name quite a few buildings in the town that are absolutely awful. That it's really important to have, and would they look at that sort of thing? So, like, one of my big things is, I think those flats by the river that have balconies, they're bringing the inside out and the outside in, and it's a flow, and they seem to fit. Whereas if you've just got, I know it's not a residential building, but it could be the county council building. When I was in on Monday and it was raining, it was horrible. It was grey because it was concrete. It was just absolutely awful. And it doesn't give a very... When the sun's shining, it's okay. But on Monday, I just thought, it looks like something out of the Eastern Bloc.
So we're in a fortunate position at the minute, because we know that once the master plan's completed, there isn't going to be a big chunk of time where we think, right, well, how are we going to get some of this delivered? Because the borough's got sites that it's active on, the county's got sites that it's active on. But we can't do all of it. You know, you've seen how long it takes to be able to assemble land and how much money it takes and pulling buildings down. So effectively, the borough and the county are going, well, we're cracking on, but there's more to do. These are the other opportunity sites. So come on, private sector, come and have a look at these. And that goes back to Maxine's original point about giving some clarity to the private sector, because if they can see what that bigger picture is potentially going to be, their interest is then stronger.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
I need a short admin break.
Sure, and this is a good moment to move on. I'm sure we just note this at the moment, but you're going to bring it back.
We will do, yes.
Because
yes.
of the work that will have been produced.
And Chairman, if we could, have we recorded the first company, Andrew Locke?
David Locke.
You went to have some hyperlinks
to have some information from them, that would be... Very much
so that's an action. Thank you. And again, when we do the work programme, we're going to need to see where we slot it in.
The other thing to note is, I mentioned that we're doing a framework document specifically for the borough council sites. That piece of work is talking to this piece of work, because it goes into more detail. We'll be bringing that to this group as well.
Okay. Thanks, Maxine. You're going, are you?
Is that okay, Chair?
Delighted.
Thank you.
Have a happy Christmas.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, you're not staying till the end.
Moving on. We move on. It's you again. Maxie.
I know.
It's you again, Michelle, I think.
Yep.
We're on to the Q2 performance report, everybody, now.
Would you like to do the normal routine of taking it page by page?
Yes, I think that's probably sensible. Mm-hmm. Only interrupt if you've got something important to say.
So, page 15.
Rather threatening there.
Getting away for Christmas.
So, page 15 starts with the summary. So, we've got 19 projects across the service, of which 6 had actions scheduled for quarter 2, which is July to September. So, we're always a little bit behind on these. So 4 of them were completed and 2 are behind, and one of those is related to, in fact, both of them are related to the station gateway, which is, and we've talked about this before, the governance structure for the gateway. We need to understand what the Borough Council's role is before we basically take a role in that governance structure, and that's dependent on where we end up with the land acquisition, and that's still ongoing. Which isn't to say that we aren't doing other things. So officers have met with officers from the County Council following the changes to the levelling up funding, which I think I said last time we were here is now the local regeneration fund. So all the officers are kind of on the same page and know what's what. The County Council is still delivering on their work on Doxy Road. It's just until we know where we're going with the land acquisition, we can't kind of move that bit forward. But other than that, everything else was completed as planned. So
is the timetable on track? I mean, have we a timetable
for
all of that work
for the
gateway?
For the gateway,
yeah.
So we have a timetable in terms of spending the grant funding, which is basically by the end of March 2028,
sure.
And we're still well within that, so that's not a problem.
We'll go page by page,
yeah.
I think, and if anybody wants to pull it out,
okay.
I think that will suffice.
Is there a timetable on the land acquisition? When should we be expecting that?
Yeah, so basically,
yeah.
I would love it if I had a statutory.
No, I know you're not
going to
tell me a date. I
know. But what we have, and it's a shame we let Maxine go home because she'd know off the top of her head, but basically, within the timetabling for the grant funding, we have a point at which, if we aren't going to be able to complete the land acquisition, then we need to think again about our element of the funding because it relates to the land. But we're not there yet, but I can't off the top of my head remember when it is, but I can find out for you and we can let you know. But yeah, there's a timetable for that which kind of then dictates the timetable for the land.
So what I'm ascertaining from that is that there's a potential route through this where the land acquisition doesn't take place.
I would rather there wasn't, obviously,
right. Yes.
But if that's the case, thanks to the fact that we now have flexibility around the use of the funding,
right.
It's not the position we were in, which was we were pushing very hard on the basis that, well, actually, we've got this deadline.
Yeah. Right.
But no, we've got the flexibility now.
Okay.
I'm going to ask if anybody's got any points on page 16 to speak.
Just a quick one. I noticed there's no progress report on completing the demolition of the Gingall shopping centre. Is it on schedule?
So that's purely because, and I get confused with this, the cross is in the column for quarter 3, which is the quarter that finishes at the end of next week.
Mm.
The quick answer is all the structures will be completed. So bringing down the main bits of structure. There's a couple of bits that will remain, which are very, very minor. And the same relates to the co-op. The works that you'll see on site in the new year are basically crushing all of the materials and getting them removed off site and getting the sites levelled out. But the actual main demolition works will be finished by, well, I'm not sure whether they're working next week or not. I am. But yeah, by Christmas.
Okay. Next, page 17. Any comment on there, Michelle? That's works on target and actions
yeah,
so completed. There's no
yeah,
actions due in quarter two.
The only no.
Okay. I'm now looking at page 20.
Yeah, that's basically for the action that was completed in quarter one and looking ahead to quarter four. So,
Q4.
Yeah.
Then we move on to the KPIs. It all looks exceptionally good. Any comments on that? Anyone got any views? No? 22? 23 is the last. And this takes us to the major planning applications, which Dean's not here, but they always come out extraordinarily good looking, and yet the complaints keep flowing. As with all, and I can never fathom it, to be honest.
So the bit that's difficult to see from the stats, but I think is in on page 22.
Yeah.
There were only two applications that were determined that were classed as majors in that quarter. So
they had a pretty good.
Well, It can fluctuate quite a lot. I mean, some quarters you might not have any major applications, others you might have 8 or 9, but because it's such small numbers, the fluctuations look quite...
It's almost more significant on the non-major
yeah,
planning applications.
That's where the volume is.
The sort of statistics seem to be remarkably good, and yet the complaints keep flowing in. I know a lot of work's been done.
I think... There are, you can have complaints about speed of processing, which will be linked to the improvement plan that's in place, because to be able to implement that plan, it's going to mean some things are done a bit slower to speed up getting rid of older cases. The other is when people are complaining about applications that they don't like, which is nothing really to do with the process and more to do with the content.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, if you say, oh, well, there's a lot of complaints, it depends what kind they are as to what the issues are. And when you've got lots of big, complicated applications, as we have at the minute, you do get more complaints because maybe people aren't in favour of that kind of development, as opposed to having an issue with the process.
And we'll bring planning back, but to see how it's performing.
Yes.
Once some of the work's been
yep.
done. Anybody got any comments on any of that? If not, we move on to the next item. Oh, which? Ah, that's mine. Now. The Borough Council's very good at coming out with strategies, and one of the strategies that's always come out in past years has been for the night, what they call the nighttime economy. And the strategies that come out are nothing to do with the nighttime economy at all. They're all about controlling drunken people who come out of the nightclubs, as far as I can see. And that's a big exaggeration, I know. But what I'm trying to say is that I would like to have a look at how the nighttime and the evening economy performs in this town and how it could perform, what we could be doing to make it work better. And it's certainly something that as we make the changes to the town centre in terms of people living in the town more, different kinds of industries coming in and so forth, it seemed to me that this is a moment to start thinking about what the economy is doing in the town of Stafford. We've got Marks and Spencers that's on a contract. we've got other nationals that come and go. It'd be interesting to see how the independents perform. It'd be interesting to me to see how any of these operate in the evenings, do they, or when there are events on and so forth. There are a lot of issues that seem to me could be looked at and thought about and introduced into our own planning policies to make the town more vital after 5 o'clock in the evening. Because most of it, as you walk down the street, it feels quite dead. And I'm sure there is, I think there'll be towns where they've made it work. So that's why I brought it in here. I think the officers got very worried because they thought I was needing to have a police report and all the rest of it, and it's none of that. It's to do with what we can do to make the businesses that operate in the evenings and the night time operate more effectively and to help them expand. Any thoughts?
So I assume that everyone got an invite to the Nighttime Industries Association conference last year and for this coming year in their email. I did. You get a free ticket as a councillor. I went along. It was really interesting. It was in Birmingham. I dual-hatted. Obviously, my day job is a music production academic. I teach events management and music industry and things like that. So I went along as a councillor to go and listen to people talk about planning policy and how that relates to the nighttime economy. And I went along as a music academic to see how the cultural aspect of that went in. And actually went to a session from a pressure group from Berlin who explicitly put that particular perspective across, that this is a policy issue, but it's also a cultural issue. So this is about economy, but it's also about culture. And I think highlighting that a lot of our nighttime economy in Stafford is actually about culture. It's about people going to music events, theatre, the art club, photography club, all these types of things, the things that drive our nighttime economy in Stafford. And thinking of it as not just making money, but also the development and creation and the production of culture within Stafford is fundamentally linked to it. And making these spaces vital has as much to do about ensuring that we support and allow the production of culture in those spaces. And I think that there's a direct link to planning policy there. One of the areas that I think about a lot here, and the Nighttime Industry Association do a great report every year, which means I don't have to do lots of research into what's happened, and I can talk about what's changed in the nighttime economy to my students really easily because they do such a really accessible report. But in the time that I've been active in the nighttime economy, so I was 18 in 1999, 75% of nightclubs have shut. So between that period and now, 75% of nightclubs that existed then, we have 75% less in that period of time. So that particular aspect, the late night economy, that aspect of the culture of it has substantially shifted in that time period. A lot of that is to do with planning policy. So a lot of that is noise complaints, people moving to spaces, noise complaints, they can't afford to keep those spaces open. And I've raised this more than once in this committee, the question of where we have some of our noisiest nighttime economy in the town centre is at the far end of town where we are, as a borough, proposing to develop potentially residential, and is there a conflict there? And I think that there is the potential for a conflict there, but also at the same time thinking about, is there a potential in policy to say, actually, you've chosen to move into this place, it was noisy before you got there, and if you do move in, that is what you're accepting. You're moving into a vibrant, vital, noisy space. At the same time as, in terms of thinking about their design, how that's procured to ensure that they are as soundproof as possible. So I think there's a number of kind of features to that, but I think that the inclusion of culture as an important thing in the nighttime economy is an important thing for us to come.
That's really interesting. And it makes, it sort of reinforces what I'm thinking about. I just feel that we've got something missing here that we could do a lot more work on. I'm not sure who there is, but my thought was that we actually start with the task and finish group, so, and try and not to put pressure on the officers, but do it ourselves, as it were. Do a bit of brainstorming to see what we could come up with, and what you've said, Doug, is really refreshing and helpful, I think. But it needs some commitment from some of the members if we were going to do it. It's the right time, because we've got the local plan coming through one day, and we've got all this work on the town centre taking place, and I just didn't want to miss it, because it's been missed every time over the last, well, I've been on the council for 18 years or something, and we talk about the nighttime economy, and so rarely is it actually about the nighttime economy.
I'd agree, Chair, and it also comes down to the expectations of different age groups, really. You know, the younger sort of 18, 19, 20 year olds are the ones that are looking for somewhere that's open until 2 o'clock in the morning, whereas potentially the councillors sitting around this table might not necessarily be looking for that on a daily basis.
And that's the evening bit.
Yeah, they're more likely to be looking for somewhere to go for a meal or go for an early doors drink. And there are certain pockets within Stafford, I think, working very, very well. I mean, we've got one literally over the road where the Verso Lounge, that area always seems to be thriving.
And it'd be interesting to interview them and ask what they do that seems to make them successful.
Well, I totally agree with the cultural thing. This is as important as anything else.
Would you be happy if we set a task and finish group up?
I think the only thing we need to probably take away is work out from an officer point of view which head of service we need to kind of get involved in that. Cause
it's got to be the economic head of service.
Yeah, but there might be...
We can call in all the others, but this is about the economy, not about the... trying to think what else there is, the other... sides of it. I mean, it's not the street pastors bit particularly, is what I'm trying to say.
It'll feed into other areas.
Of course, yes. It's absolutely essential. I think, and the point Michelle's making is that it is a bit of a silo that goes on, and they all need to be involved.
Yeah, because you've basically got economic development and planning as one area, then you've got parking and events sit within another service area, then you've got licensing and the sort of regulatory bit in another service area, and then community safety in another. So it's just working out.
So what we need is to know exactly what we want to do in our task and finish, which is not to look at the whole of the nighttime economy.
Yeah, it's not to be too broad.
No, we want to look... Come on, Doug, you're the expert on you're the brains.
I suppose the economic and culture bit. It's the...
economic and cultural aspects of
the businesses evening. That operate. And in particular, not curbing those businesses, but enabling those businesses to thrive, I think is the key thing that I would suggest is the driver for it.
Can you make a minute out of that, Jackie? With your genius.
It's important to understand what people want as well, because the youth of today may not want... I mean, they have those afternoon discos, don't they? And they're all our age and older that go into... They're not the kids are going, or the youth going. They're very different, aren't they?
They're specifically advertised to older.
Well, they are, though. Yeah. But the nightclub... I mean, you think how many nightclubs were about when I was of nightclubbing age. I mean, not that I went, because I didn't like them, but...
No, they all go to pin bowling, so...
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
much
at the top of the world, I know it's going in, and there was Reynolds and all those sort of places. There was lots of places. They're not... what, and it's, you probably understand because that's what you get through, but why are they, just not what they want, or is it what's closed them, or it's that as well, isn't it?
Mm.
No, I was going to say it's slightly personal. I quite like to go for a coffee in the early evening, but the coffee bar's shut. Well, the coffee shop shut at 6 and the pub's open. There's nothing in between. And then in the old days, you know, there was coffee bars where young people could go that leading into Lux Point. I mean, you have got that Games you put Emporium, I think in Market Street, and the new bowling alley next to the cinema. But I do wonder if there's an area there to encourage young people, or perhaps people who don't want to go drinking so much in the early evening, places for them to go.
So what I feel or get the impression is that people would be happy with the Task and Finish group. We either say everybody sits on it if you would like to, or we have volunteers, but if everybody would like to sit on it, seems fine to me. Doug's very busy, I'm not sure, but you'll agree to chair it, but that would be ideal.
I'm happy to.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So we've got a chairman for it. We've got as many members of the committee, and we need to decide when we first start to meet, but first of all have a plan of what we're going to discuss. And in all of that, I need to keep the officers properly informed. And we'll start in January.
I will do a list review and send round some research.
Excellent. Thanks very much for that. And we move swiftly on to the work programme before I meant to finish at 8, so we've run late. So the work programme is quite busy in March. We've agreed to look at biodiversity, net gain, historic buildings, rural economy, enforcement policy, local plan update. Local plan update, Alex, would that be very long, or is that... how far on are you going to be by then?
Time will tell with further government announcements in the new year.
Oh, because it's been delayed from this meeting, so it's been pushed on to the next meeting. I think we need to be aware that the meeting we have with the resources, we may need to move on to our own meeting on that day, on that evening, if people were happy with that. Depending, it's not going to be a long meeting, because the joint section 106 update, is it?
I thought so. The rural economy item, unless there's any particular urgency to that.
That can be put.
We can, yeah.
So, Jackie, we'll take rural economy off. Are we happy with that? Put it to a later meeting. I'm just very conscious that it's a huge agenda, that.
The draft business report will be in the beginning of the next municipal year.
Oh, right. So draft business report comes off and that'll go into...
the next municipal year.
That's not till July, then.
That's what we did this time.
Yeah, OK. So that makes it manageable. Are we happy...
Had we not received the enforcement policy report previously?
Sushil came and presented, didn't he?
Yeah.
Was that the last meeting?
Last meeting.
Yeah.
So does that...
So we could... I think it was just... Yeah. I think we ought to just have an update from him.
Yeah,
so a brief update, because we don't want to lose it.
Something's just gone through Cabinet,
yeah.
Hasn't it?
Yeah.
And
on
the
enforcement.
Going to bring the paper to here after it's been to Cabinet.
Okay, so we leave that on. Are you clear on this, Jackie? Are we really confusing? So at the moment, I think we've got biodiversity net gain on. Does that still stand? Historic buildings.
Enforcement.
Enforcement. Local plan update, if the government's got anything to say by then.
Yes, I mean, I suspect the local plan update, we're expecting further details in the spring, so if they're not...
Maybe
they're
that
not
we ditch that.
...by the time of the 19th, then we can have it on the 31st.
Okay.
Alex, just looking at the report deadline for the 19th of March, I'm just mindful that the conservation area sorry, the conservation officer is off until probably the end of January. It
Absolutely.
Might be a bit tight given how long she'll have been away from work to be able to meet that deadline, so whether that one could maybe go to a later meeting.
We're ending up with a very short meeting now. We'll keep it on at the moment
okay.
and see what she
yeah.
says. Is there anything that we had on today that needs to come on? Yes, if we have the task and finish between now and then, we could do with the report on the evening, whatever Doug labels it, the aspects of the evening and the nighttime economy.
So when is the joint meeting with resources?
31st of March.
31st of March.
31st of
yeah.
March. So we haven't got anything between now and then for this committee?
No. And that
we've got the
19th
of March.
You've
got
the 19th of March is our proper meeting, and then the 31st
yeah.
is the special meeting.
Yeah, I've got it. Thank you.
Okay. I think that will be manageable.
Yeah.
We're happy with that. Anybody got anything else on that plan? If not, I declare the meeting closed. I wish everybody a very happy Christmas, and the officers a nice opportunity to have a break.
Thank you.